The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, already at the last program of the week. Friday is already upon us, a drizzly day here in Edstone, the Edstone campus, the sister campus of our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. Drizzly, but the birds are still hanging out at the bird feeder. They're hungry on this rainy day. Sometimes they stay away from the feeder when it's drizzly and cold, but not today. Quite a lot of activity outside my office window. Yesterday after the show, my family headed into Birmingham to take our Life in the UK test. We were very nervous about this. It's not a super hard test, but given that we're not from the UK, we were studying away through the week, and all three of us passed it, my son included, so we were very happy about that. You need to pass this test before you can apply for your permanent stay visa. So hopefully we'll get that processed here in the next couple of months and stay here for a little bit longer. We have Sunday afternoon, the live trumpet lecture. This is this weekend. It's already upon us, March 1st. That's at 4 p.m. Here in the UK, 5 p.m. In Europe. And over in the United States, it's pretty much Sunday morning, 8 o'clock in the morning for the Los Angeles or the West Coast area, and then 10 o'clock in the morning for Oklahoma, Chicago, that strip of Midwestern territory, and then 11 a.m. on the East Coast. If you'd like to email anything or comment or maybe ask a question that we're thinking about having a promo in the middle of the live presentation that would give us some time to look through some emails as they're coming in, not necessarily during the show itself, but over the course of this weekend, if you'd like to email us with any feedback or a question perhaps, you can send that to live@thetrumpet.com. If you send it to that address, we'll know that it's specifically for the live production coming up on Sunday. So live@thetrumpet.com. And as I say, if all goes well, if we're not frantically working to try to make sure everything's playing the way that it should, if we can relax a bit while that live presentation is going on Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning in the States, then hopefully we can get to some feedback right at the start of the second segment. Speaking of TV, we've got the Mystery of the Ages repeat coming up this weekend here in the UK, and I believe over the past 5 years, this will be the 19th or 20th time that we play this program. This is the one that typically generates anywhere between 150 to 250 requests for Mystery of the Ages. So as much as we like to get the message out, newer messages out, this is one that we continually fall back on when we have new, or rather repeats to play, because it just generates a lot of interest in Mystery of the Ages, and that's the book that we want to get out, I think, most of all. So we'll get back to you on Monday with a follow-up to the Trumpet Live lecture that plays Sunday afternoon, and then any stats that we might have for the UK program that plays on television this weekend as well. On today's show, we're going to be talking about how education comes from thinking about what you see and hear and read, as Herbert Armstrong said. We started with this study on yesterday's program, and so we'll finish that off today. And also, later on in this segment, we'll be quickly going through an article I've been waiting for years. It's about plastic, and you'll just have to wait and see what this author has to say about that. Well, the coronavirus has spread into about 50 countries now. The Dow Jones yesterday suffered its biggest one-day drop in history. I think it plummeted by about 1,000 or 1,100 points. This one news site, Stat News, it says it's clear that the virus is spreading undetected in the United States, but how broadly it's spreading is an utter mystery. And I think that's what's triggered such a panic over this epidemic, is there's so much still that we don't know. There was some speculation yesterday as to whether the Pope has it. He's taken to being ill after all of these. Of course, he's involved in mass gatherings all the time. And the last public appearance he had, I guess it was Wednesday of this week, he looked like he had a pretty bad cold, coughing, blowing his nose, and so on. And then officials, which makes the rumors go that much further, I guess, they refused to comment. Nouriel Roubini, he's also known as Dr. Doom for some of his predictions. He's the one that predicted the disaster of the 2008 financial crisis. He says that the worst is yet to come, and he's saying that even with the beating that the markets have taken this week, that still the markets are much too optimistic, and that the economic consequences of this virus, it'll end up being much worse and last much longer than investors currently expect. So that's his prognostication. We'll see, I guess, what happens in the days, weeks, and months ahead. There's others that are saying that the markets have, certainly the stock market in the U.S. has been due for a major correction anyway. So perhaps this will level things out. We'll see. California, there's one patient who's sick in California with this, and I guess the reason this has gotten some headlines is because that patient has not traveled overseas, and so far as we know, has not come into contact with any known case of coronavirus, and yet the sickness has set in. It took, I think, 10 days for authorities to test this individual. So far, 33 people in California have tested positive. The state is monitoring, I think, thousands of possible victims of this disease. New York has asked for 700 people to quarantine themselves due to this sickness. Going back to California, you might just keep in mind the two packs coming up on the West Coast in Fresno and Seattle, just because obviously if this worsens on the West Coast, that could very much discourage people from turning out to a public gathering like our packs. This is Dr. Inglesby. He was interviewed on Fox News yesterday. He is from Johns Hopkins University. And he's talking here about there have been reports about the U.S. preparedness being a cut above so many other nations. But as Dr. Inglesby says here, there's really only so much that you can do to prepare for something, particularly when it spreads like this by respiratory transmission. Here's clip one.
Yeah, that was a study that looked at countries around the world and how well they can prevent and detect and respond to big epidemics. It was a few years of work, and fortunately, the U.S. is comparatively better prepared than most countries around the world. But one of the main findings in that study was that no country, including the U.S., is completely prepared to deal with a pandemic, especially one that's spread by respiratory transmission.
And we've gone through some of the prophecies from Revelation 6 and Matthew 24 and elsewhere that talk about what is prophesied to happen in the last days. And even when you look at some of the statistics, considering the size, the global population, and even the percentage of deaths, considering how many people have contracted this disease, it's still quite low. The numbers are still quite low. I mean, you can see why there is a spreading panic for sure, because of how many different countries have been infected by this. And then you add to it the shrouded secrecy of the reporting coming out of China, Iran. And so, yes, you can see the figures there on your screen if you're watching the YouTube stream. 82,000 cases confirmed. And the total deaths, 2,800, so that it amounts to about, I think, 3% of those who get it end up dying. In the U.S., though, going back to what this doctor pointed out, the rating that the U.S. has gotten, that we have actually, contrary to what Democrats are out there saying, the U.S. has done more in advance of this spreading pandemic. The U.S. has only tested so far 445 people, but that's, again, there's not that many people that have gotten it in the United States. And as far as the number who've been tested, it's a tiny fraction of what some other countries are doing right now. But as I say, all of this certainly doesn't stop Democrats from saying it's Donald Trump's fault. The AP yesterday came out with a fact check on Democrats, and the headline is that Democrats distort coronavirus readiness. How bad is it when the Associated Press is saying that Democrats are distorting this for political gain? It says Democratic presidential contenders are describing the federal infectious disease bureaucracy as rudderless and ill-prepared for the coronavirus threat because of budget cuts and ham-handed leadership by President Donald Trump. That's a distorted picture. For starters, Trump hasn't succeeded in cutting the budget. I mean, Congress is the one that's responsible for spending the money. And Donald Trump hasn't cut anything. And furthermore, all through this impeachment proceeding, how many times have we heard that if you're in the administrative state, if you're a career professional, you are not to be questioned. You have unimpeachable character. So what about all of these career professionals working at the CDC and other government agencies that are working to fight against the spread of this disease? Now, all of a sudden, everything's called into question. Anything and everything to get Donald Trump. It says here, the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention aren't suffering from budget cuts that never took effect. If they never took effect, there's no budget cuts that they're suffering from. It says here, among the health authorities overseeing the work are Dr. Ann Shushat, CDC's principal deputy director and a veteran of previous outbreaks. And then this other doctor, it says, NIH's infectious disease chief who has advised six presidents. So these are people that have been working over the course of several presidencies in some cases. Now the whole system's flawed. Now Donald Trump, his administration, they were caught completely unawares. Never mind, as I said yesterday, that from the Democratic camp, there was absolute and total silence about this epidemic during those early weeks in January and February. That's when they were all preoccupied with impeachment. We need to get more witnesses. We need to do this. We need to take out Donald Trump here. He's a threat to democracy. He has to be removed. Mitt Romney's awesome. That's what we heard for weeks and weeks and weeks until just this week. And it's like they all get together inside of some darkened room at Congress, and then they come out and decide, and they all say the same thing. It's the president's fault. From Newsbusters today, that it says here, the left is so deranged, so unhinged, and so obsessed with hitting President Trump that they're actually making him the face of coronavirus in order to spread fear. One New York Times op-ed decided to defy all sense and call the potential pandemic the Trump virus. No kidding. This is not a joke. This is the New York Times. This is the paper of record. Trump virus. It's an opinion piece by Gail Collins. Maybe it's another one that will be sued for libel. Who knows? Mr. Trump said yesterday or the day before that this suit against the New York Times, it was the first of more to come. And he's doing this in order to try to correct the record. Now, there have been some commentators that have said he's probably not going to have much success with these libel suits. But still, you can hardly blame him for this is 3 years. We're 3 years into it. And the lies just continue and continue. Devin Nunes was on Fox yesterday talking about how that he's been out front, really, sounding the alarm about the deep state, about the Russia collusion hoax, about the illegal wiretapping of American citizens, the unmasking, all these things, about corruption and the FISA courts. And even he said yesterday he's traveled the country, and as he tells audiences everywhere that he goes, it's even worse than I thought it was. All of this evil, it's worse, he said. He's trying to raise awareness. There's still quite a lot of it that needs to be uncovered and exposed. This is what he said yesterday, again, on Fox News, this clip two.
One thing that I tell the American people every time that I speak and I go out on the road and I talk to people is that, remember, the deep state here is much worse than even I thought it ever was. And so people have to remember that this is one yard in a cloud of dust. You have to wake up every day to fight, because the socialist left, they've worked hard to take over the Democratic Party. They work hard to get Bernie Sanders in the lead. They're not going away.
You have to wake up every day prepared to fight, he said. And so, again, you've got these libel suits. You've got reports on President Trump, like with appointing Grinnell as the acting director, to get in there and to just clean house, to get rid of these deep state operatives, these snakes, as the president calls them. It's not going to be an easy job to drain the swamp. It's pretty deep. It goes pretty deep. You look at the Democrat candidates. Bernie Sanders is, of course, way out front at the moment. We've got South Carolina coming up, as well as Super Tuesday, so a lot of delegates are in play here in the next few days. But this from the Daily Caller, this is just an astounding article as well. Dozens of Democratic superdelegates say that they're willing to sacrifice party cohesion to prevent Bernie Sanders from becoming their party's nominee at the Democratic National Convention in July. It says the New York Times spoke with 93 superdelegates following Sanders' victory in Nevada on February 22nd, the vast majority of which said they believe the Democratic Party is headed toward a contested convention. So all of these votes, by the time we get to the Democratic Party or the convention, we may find that these votes don't even really matter. That's what they're saying, and they're admitting it openly. The same people that want to do away with the Electoral College every time that they lose to a Republican. The people's voice. You've got to hear the people's voice. Every vote has to count. Except when it's a Democratic primary. It says current forecasting models back up the superdelegate's prediction of a contested election. So it says if he doesn't get half the delegates, I guess there's almost 4,000 delegates, so he's got to get about 2,000. If he doesn't get it, it says here, the floodgates would open at the convention if no candidate breaches that threshold. All 3,979 pledged delegates would then be free to vote for anyone of their choosing. And the 771 superdelegates, comprised of elected Democrats and high-ranking members of the Democratic National Committee, would be able to cast votes for whomever they wish as well. So the setup, you're already getting them coming out saying they're going to do exactly what they did in 2016. Listen to this Democrat strategist on one of the cable stations yesterday, clip three.
This is what people need to remember. The Democratic Party has a party. The party decides its nominee. The public doesn't really decide the nominee. The public gets to vote for president of the United States, but people who are active in the party, who participate in the party, they decide the nominee. Superdelegates are very influential in the party. Also, delegates are very influential. And just because you're a pledged delegate for Bernie Sanders or a pledged delegate for Joe Biden doesn't mean when you get to the convention floor that you'll stay a delegate for Biden or Sanders. That's a process. And so it is a process to pick the candidate who wants to be the standard bearer for the party to try to win in November. And so Bernie got to understand that process. And it's a real selective and detailed process.
It's astounding, really, because every time, again, there's a loss to a Republican, everyone's voice wasn't heard. The process was unfair. We need to get rid of the Electoral College. And I'm not even really comparing the Electoral College to this process. The Electoral College is the way the framers set it up. But this is something that basically just puts it in the hands of a handful of, as it said in that article, you know, these superdelegates comprised of elected Democrats and high-ranking members of the Democratic National Committee. So forget about what everyone voted during these primaries. I think the Sanders camp probably realizes that to take away the nomination, they're going to have to win a comfortable majority. They're going to have to win over 50%. And of course, that's hard to do when you've got several candidates, when it's not just two people. If you've got 5, 6, 7 people in the running, it's going to be hard to get 51%. So that's your Democrat Party. This New York Post piece, by the way, says that Hillary Clinton took more cash from Harvey Weinstein than any other Democrat. The Clinton campaign came out after some of these reports and said, well, look, we did take some contributions from Weinstein, but every other Democrat has done that as well. But this study has since found Federal Election Commission filings show the disgraced movie mogul handled $1.4 million for Clinton during her presidential bid in 2016 and handed her another $73,000 dating back to her Senate run. And it says further on that, or actually earlier, it says Hillary Clinton raked in more cash from convicted rapist Harvey Weinstein than any other politician, despite brushing off donations by claiming he gave money to every Democrat. So that's in the New York Post today. It's not in the major media tomorrow. Of course, it'll be nowhere. It's a non-story. No need for an investigation. Nothing to look into there. But certainly, for those with eyes to see, a horrible look for Hillary Clinton and her supporters. This article about the perverse panic over plastic. The reason I guess this stood out to me today, it was more of personal preference, I guess, squeezing this one in, just because you do see quite a movement here in Europe and in the UK to get rid of plastic bags, to get rid of, and this is probably the biggest irritation, getting rid of plastic forks and replacing them with these wooden sporks, I guess. We were at the Birmingham airport last week trying to enjoy a nice salad from Pret, and eating it with a wooden fork is just not a pleasurable experience at all. The wooden fork has kind of a taste to it. The plastic fork doesn't. You just enjoy your salad. So in any event, when this fellow at City Journal comes out and says, look, what we're doing to try to save the environment by recycling plastic or by not using plastic, it's actually hurting things. It says here, why do our political leaders want to take away our plastic bags and straws? This question's even more puzzling than a related one that I've been studying for decades. Why do they want us to recycle our garbage? The two obsessions have some common roots, but the moral panic over plastic is especially perverse. The recycling movement had a superficial logic, at least at the outset. Municipal officials expected to save money by recycling trash instead of burying it or burning it. Now that recycling has turned out to be ruinously expensive while achieving little or no environmental benefit, some local officials, the pragmatic ones anyway, are once again sending trash straight to landfills and incinerators. It says the plastic panic has never made any sense, and it's intensifying, even as evidence mounts that it's not only a waste of money, but also harmful to the environment, not to mention humans. So here's another example of man getting it wrong, and yet just continuing on. It will not change back. That's my prediction. They'll find some other reason or excuse. Well, we've got to do it because it makes us feel good about ourselves. He makes the point in this piece that a lot of the recycling, they'll take these plastic products, they'll recycle them, and then, well, they were sending them to China initially. China finally said, we don't want any more of this. And so they're sending it to other nations in Southeast Asia and elsewhere. And what happens over there is that when they're done being used, then they go into the rivers, the streams, the oceans. And yes, there is a problem with piles of plastics. But his point is, just send it to the incinerator or the landfill where it can be buried so that it doesn't end up in the ocean. But he talks about this video from 2017 put out by the BBC, Blue Planet 2, talking about or condemning our throwaway society. And we've got to fix this. It's depictions of sea turtles, dolphins, that's this video, and whales in jeopardy prompted Queen Elizabeth II to ban plastic straws and bottles from the royal estates. And the documentary has galvanized so many other leaders that Greens celebrate the Blue Planet effect. He says that what drives a lot of this is just people, they know how wasteful we are as a society. And so they do this, they take these kinds of steps so that they can feel better, even if it doesn't really do any good. They just do it for their own vanity so that they can feel better about themselves. And you've seen stories, no doubt, about, you know, entertainers or athletes that make the mistake of holding something like a plastic bottle up for an Instagram photo or whatever else, and then they're plastic shamed on social media. Just ridiculous. The kinds of things that we spend our time and energy and effort and money on to supposedly fix the environment. It says when you recycle, this is one of the myths, when you recycle plastic, you prevent it from polluting the oceans. This myth is based on the enduring delusion that plastic from curbside bins can be efficiently turned into other products. But sorting the stuff is so onerous and labor-intensive, and the resulting materials of so little value, that recycling plastic is hopelessly unprofitable in the United States and Europe. But we keep on doing it. We keep right on doing it. It says municipalities expected to make money selling their plastic waste to local recyclers, but instead they have had to pay to get rid of it, mostly by shipping it to Asian countries with low labor costs. It says that means that some of the plastic from your recycling bin has probably ended up in the ocean because it has gone to a country with a high rate of mismanaged waste. Journalists and environmentalists have been collecting horror stories in Malaysia and Indonesia and Western plastics piling up at illegal dumps and spewing toxins when they're burned in backyard kitchens. The people living near the dumps and recycling operations complain that foreign plastics are fouling their air and polluting their rivers. So we send it to another side of the world, and then they proceed to burn it or to throw it into the ocean. What a problem. How is this going to be fixed? How are we going to clean up the earth? How are we actually going to clean up the environment? Well, God has some real solutions. Some real solutions that go beyond, far beyond these kinds of efforts. That even when proven wrong, we just continue right along as stubbornly as ever. Well, it's got to be right. Look, I mean, you're eating from a wooden fork at the airport. This is going to save the environment. It's not saving it. In some cases, it's making it even worse. He made one final little point here. He talks about the efficiency of the plastic bags at the supermarket. And how that once they've been, the studies show that even in those cases, people tend to use them again They'll get the plastic bags from the supermarket, then they'll take them home. They'll use it for a waste bin or whatever. But the push here, of course, is paper bags, or, you know, they like for people to take the reusable ones where they go back and forth to the supermarket using the same bag. But studies show there that 50% of the people that then go shopping forget, like I fall into this category all the time, you forget to take the bag back with you. So then you've got to get another one, and then you end up getting like 10 or 12 of them in your kitchen, and then you eventually have to throw them away. They take up more space in the landfill, and these little plastic bags are actually more easily disposed, and they take up far less space in the landfill. But I guess don't get me started on that. When we come back, we'll get into finishing our study on how education comes from thinking like God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
In 1 Corinthians 12, the Apostle Paul likens the church or the work to a human body, a physical body, and how that the body is composed of many members. There's just, though, the one head, and we receive direction from our spiritual head, who is Jesus Christ. And of course, there's a physical head at the top of the church as an organism, God's apostle, God's pastor general. And he runs with this message. The word apostle, of course, means one sent. One sent. And yet the rest of us as members in the body of Christ, we too have to run with this message. The way that we run with it, of course, is by living the truth of God, and by letting our lights shine. And so that means we're continually evaluating ourselves. That means we're continually pondering the path of our feet, as I read yesterday from Proverbs 4, to make sure that we're on the right track, to make sure that we're on course. Psalm 119 and verse 59, it says, I thought on my ways and turned my feet unto your testimonies. Here again, Jeremiah uses the same analogy, keeping on the right path. And to do so, he says he thought on his ways and he turned his feet unto God's testimonies. He had to have a little course correction here and again. And he was able to know where to go, what to do, how to do it, by pondering on the ways of God. In Haggai 1, God corrects the people of God there for being too focused on material pursuits. They were putting their own houses and construction and all these physical goals and such. They were putting that ahead of building God's house, building a house for God. And verse 5 of Haggai 1, it says, "Now therefore, thus says the Eternal of hosts, consider your ways." Consider. Consider what you're doing. Consider your ways. Consider how you're living. It says, "You have sown much and bring in little. You eat, but you have not enough. You drink, but you are not filled with drink. You clothe you, but there is none warm. And he that earns wages to put it into a bag with holes. Thus says the Eternal of hosts," he repeats, "consider your ways." Consider your ways. My father in the Haggai booklet, he says that the word consider is a strong word in the Hebrew. If you look into it, if you study that Hebrew word, it means to set your heart, and that means your mind, to set your mind on your ways. It means to deeply concentrate on your ways. It means to examine yourself carefully. And there's a lot of God's people today who are in grave danger because they will not consider their ways. They assume that they're on the right track. They assume that there's safety in numbers. They assume that they can just bounce around from one church to the next. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this on Sunday in the live lecture. That thinking, it's incredible how quickly the teaching of the Bible, the soundness of God's truth, it's astounding how quickly that can leave our minds if we don't continually ponder on and think on the ways of God. We need course corrections every day, multiple times a day. Consider your ways, God says. Ponder the path of your feet. Consider every step that you take. Is it in the direction of righteousness? Or is it in the direction of sin? There's a verse in Ezekiel 18. Verse 28, it says, "Because he considers and turns away from all his transgressions that he has committed, he shall surely live. He shall not die." So why will he live? Why will he not die? Because he considers, he ponders, he thinks on the way of his living, his life, and he turns away from transgressions. When we do that, well, that's repentance. That's what repentance is. This is a daily process. It's a daily renewal, as I covered yesterday, 2 Corinthians 4:16. We've got to be renewed daily. The inward man is renewed day by day. The outward man is decaying daily. Decaying just like all that refuse in landfills. But the inner man, this is what God's most interested in. Here is where the real beauty is. The character of God. That has to be renewed daily, and it just gets more and more beautiful and vibrant and healthy and lively and energetic with each passing day. Even though our bodies grow old and slow down, there is a daily spiritual renewal through the power of God's Spirit, and it's brought on by daily Bible study and prayers, occasional fasting, fellowshipping with God's family, meditation. Don't forget about that one. Meditation on God's ways. God's truth. This is what we need to do to continually regenerate that spiritual power in our lives. God's Spirit doesn't do it on its own for us. We have to go to God for it. We have to pray to God for more of it. We have to pray for God to strengthen our faith. We have to pray for God to inspire our prayers even. We've got an advocate. We've got Jesus Christ as our intercessor. We've got a lot of help and assistance, but we've got to go get it. Mr. Armstrong compared God's spirit to electricity that has to circulate. We go to God as the source of that power and ask him for his power, and then he gives us that dynamic spirit, which then flows into our lives and then flows out of our lives in the form of good works. We're walking a certain way. We're running with the message. We're pondering the path of our feet. Going forward with Christ, a daily renewal, a daily transformation, as we read yesterday in Romans 12, Philippians 2, and verse 5, it says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. We have to let that mind in. And that's a unique mind. That is not a carnal mind. That is not a selfish mind. That is not a mind obsessed with self-love. It's not a biased mind. It doesn't have any kind of agenda except that it's committed to God's ways. It's, well, like the brethren in Rome that Paul addressed, they were addicted to God's way of life. If you're going to have an addiction, let it be that. Paul says in Ephesians 5, be drunk on the Spirit. So here's the addiction. Here's the obsession that we want. We want to continually ponder the path of our feet and stay on track, stay on course. Verse 3 in Philippians 2 says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Lowliness of mind, humility, meekness, to this man will I look, Isaiah 66, the one who's humble and contrite, the mind that lets Jesus Christ's mind in. There's another proverb that says, for as he thinks in his heart, so is he. That's Proverbs 23 and verse 7. Let's notice Matthew 15. Matthew chapter 15. As he thinks in his heart, so is he. Jesus also said that we speak out of the abundance of our heart. That's in Matthew chapter 12. I actually see that in my notes here. We'll get to that in a second. Got a little ahead of myself. But Matthew 15 and verse 17, it says this, do not you yet understand that whatsoever enters in at the mouth goes into the belly and is cast out into the drought or into the ground? So he's using the human body here and just the physical process of consuming food and then eliminating waste and so on. But what's he getting at, Jesus Christ? It says in verse 18, but those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. That's Matthew 5, verse 19. So this same principle, he uses the human body as an analogy, but the same is true with respect to building righteous character or not. If we fill our minds with garbage, it's eventually going to show up in the way that we behave. You're going to see it in the attitudes, in the way that we treat people, even in our mannerisms, our personality. It's not going to be pretty, spiritually speaking. But if we're filling up on the mind of Christ, what a difference. Ponder the path of your feet and let all of your ways be established. Let our ways be established in righteousness, following in the steps of Jesus Christ. A few pages back, this is that section I mentioned, Matthew 12 and verse 33, it says, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt, for the tree is known by his fruit. Very similar to the passage in Matthew 7. Judge by the fruit. Mr. Armstrong said this is one of the identifying signs of God's true church. You have to look at the fruit. You have to examine the fruit. If you're searching for God's truth, if you're searching for God's work, look at the fruit coming out from that organization. And I would submit to you that we have 30 years of it. It's in plain view for all to see. We've not concealed anything. You look at the campus, the work, the programs, the college, the educational programs, the youth programs, the Jerusalem Project, the church aircraft, all of it. God's just given one tool after another to this church for the work's sake. Coming back to this, verse 34, it says, O generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The mouth speaks what's in the heart. We can try to conceal it for a time, but it won't last for that long. It comes out eventually. As the saying goes, garbage in, garbage out. If we're filling our minds with garbage, then when we open our mouths, there's going to be garbage, rubbish, refuse. Verse 35, it says, A good man out of the good treasure of the heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth evil things. And so righteousness in, and then righteousness out. If we're filling up on righteousness, if we're filling up on God's truth, if we're praying to God earnestly every morning, every night, then that's what's going to come out in the way that we conduct ourselves individually, in our marriages, our families. I love the verse in Philippians 4 and verse 8. It's a long verse. It's a memory verse. It's a poetic verse. Paul says here, Finally, brethren, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Think on good reports. Think on what's true and honest and just and pure and lovely. Now, Jesus said we have to watch world events, and a lot of what we watch is not, it's not pretty, which is why we've got to see the hope beyond all of these latter-day prophecies, the hope beyond all the suffering and the warring and the strife and the bitterness and the hatred, the solutions to pollution, whether it's actual pollution that washes up ashore somewhere on a coast or the pollution that just comes out of devices, nonstop, a flood of it. TV, radio, the internet, all of these devices. Fill up on the things of God so that even when we're looking at the evil of this world, or by that I mean watching world events, I don't mean that we're viewing the evil on TV and things of that nature, Netflix and whatnot. We want to shun that sort of thing. But when we look at prophecies being fulfilled, when we look at news events day in and day out, we can see it, we can understand it from God's perspective, and we can know the solution right away. We can know it. Think on these things. If there be any praise, if there be any virtue, think on these things. Ponder these things. Consider these things. And then do them, verse 9, those things which you have both learned and received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace shall be with you. This is the daily battle that we are engaged in. It's a battle for every thought, and God's standard is for us to bring every thought into the obedience and the captivity of Jesus Christ, to let Him control, to guide, to direct our ways. Well, we're free moral agents, so in that sense, He can't control it. But if we surrender our lives to God, if we give our lives to Jesus Christ, He will guide us. He will empower us. He'll help us to overpower the wrong thoughts, the evil thoughts, and to replace them with the good, with righteous thoughts. Mr. Armstrong said, education comes from study, from books, from lectures, from contacts, from travel, from thinking about what you see and hear and read. It comes from thinking as well. Thinking about what you see, hear, and read. What do we see? What do we read? What are we hearing? If it's good things, if it's the things of Philippians 4 and verse 8, and then we consider that and meditate on that and ponder that, it goes a long way toward producing the kind of character that we're here to produce. God reproducing Himself, reproducing His character. We'll take a short break and finish off with some listener feedback. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is The Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
One comment here from one of our live stream social media sites. It says, I'm a new listener and really enjoy listening to the show. I really like this guy speaking. He always nails it. So it's nice to have a new listener on board, whether from YouTube, Facebook, or the Twitter stream as well. Another one here says, thanks again for revealing what the mainstream media should be delivering all along. It's disheartening to know what is actually going on behind the scenes. I'm so grateful that God has alternate plans. Another one here says, when you hear from God's true church, you can actually start hearing the trumpets being blown loud and clear. Well, as I said in the last segment, that's where these prophecies are, what they all culminate in. That last and final blast signaling the return of Christ to this earth. Another one says, greatest God-given station, radio station in America. Thank you so much. So some KPCG.FM fans. This one from Wednesday, or in response to Wednesday's show, thank you for this wonderful truth. It's a true blessing from God. And then another one says, thank you for your most trusted broadcast. We need to hear the truth. Another one says, thanks for the great show. It was inspired as usual. And then have a great day. See you tomorrow. Lastly here, this comes in from Australia. It says, I was listening to the last part of your program a while back and found myself smiling at Lincoln's view on modern Christianity and its many factions. This goes back to some of the comments we had following a book club a week or two ago. And she says, just last week we signed a lease on a little unit, and we were talking to our new landlord a few days later when she made a comment much the same. And she's a retired university-level teacher of biology for 18 years. She wasn't a churchgoer, though she does believe there's some sort of higher power. She said she never could understand how all these religions could read the same book and not agree. With the truth we have and understanding of John 6:44, we were conscious of not proselytizing, but it is interesting how even those who have no direct history with the true God, like Lincoln and our landlord, they can see the hypocrisy and vouch to stay true to what they know is right. It has made me more excited and urgent to be sure I act as a light for God and the truth going forward. It says, finally, thank you so much for your daily program with all the hard work that goes into it for you and the team behind the scenes. It's amazing, an amazing tool to stay connected with the work and a real blessing to hear down here in Australia. So if you'd like to submit feedback to the program, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next week.